This is the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast, episode 77. Good day and welcome to this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, podcaster, and author of Fun Fantasy Reads, Jamie Davis. This podcast is exactly what the title says it is, folks. It's a show focused on everything to do with fantasy books, whether it's epic fantasy or urban fantasy, whether you're talking about swords and sorcery or anything else you can think of about fantasy. We bring you the best and brightest people, authors and cover designers and narrators from the fantasy book world, and we put them here on the show for you. So I hope that you will continue to check out the episodes and let me know maybe an author you'd like to hear come on the show. As always, I always try to start off each episode with my own author update for the week, and right now I am actually prepping for a big trip to Las Vegas for a huge authors conference that's going to be there. 1,400 authors all in one place will be sharing ways that we make our stories better, ways we make our businesses better so that we can continue to write better stories. All of that is going to be happening over next week, and I'm super fired up about it. I'm also almost finished writing the next book in my Huntress Clan saga, book 2. This is the first draft of that book, and I'm really excited about it. As a reminder, the first book in that series, Huntress Initiate, will be out in just a few weeks at the end of November. So stay tuned to my Fun Fantasy Readers Facebook group. I'm actually going to be sharing a few live readings over the coming weeks from the new book and some more things. And next week, I'm going to be doing a huge giveaway contest. So if you like free stuff, come by and join the Fun Fantasy Readers Facebook group. As always, you can come and check out more information on what I'm up to by visiting my fan group over on Facebook, and that's Fun Fantasy Readers. Just look it up and request to join. We'd love to have you in there. You can also check out my website and blog over at jamiedavisbooks.com. I have a contact page over there as well, so I always look forward to hearing from people. Check in with me over there. On today's show, we are going to be interviewing Alexander Christian. Born and raised in South Florida, Alexander is a kickboxer, an Army veteran, and the middle of seven children. Married with kids and currently living in Maryland, he's been in martial arts since before he could walk, and he writes super violent, dark fantasy somewhere between anime and action movies. Here's my chat with Alexander. Alexander, it's great to have you here on the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. I want to welcome you to the program, and it's great to have you here today.
It is fantastic to be here. It's actually fantastic to have anybody interested in talking to me. So,
well, no, it's cool. I've actually just started reading the first or the book that what's it called? The Hand of the Dragons, Rook, and I'm enjoying it. So, kind of cool. So we'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. But I first think it'd be great if you want to introduce yourself a little bit to our reading audience here listening to the show, and maybe tell us a little bit about who you are and how you got started writing.
Okay, my name is Alexander Christian. I'm from South Florida. Married, three kids, all girls, so I think I did something terrible in my past life. And writing was really an outlet for me. I'm in the middle of seven kids, and it's very easy to get lost in the shuffle. And by writing stories, I could be the center of the show. And that's really where it all started for me. I've always been a fan of movies, TV shows, comic books. But there's something about the long form novel where you really get to flush out the ideas and, you know, use all your big vocabulary words and get all purple in the prose that just really speaks to me. So that's kind of what led me here. I originally went to school for screenwriting. And the thing about screenwriting is if you can't see it, it doesn't go in the screenplay. So I kind of had to unlearn all my training to get back into writing novels. But I'm much more comfortable in the novel format.
You know, it's interesting. I've talked to other people who've trained in screenwriting and scripts and things like that. And, you know, it's an interesting how they, the tools they bring to the table that are helpful and the tools that they bring. It's like a novelist going into the screenwriting business. They're always too long winded. You know, they can't,
yeah.
And, you know, and, but you tend, I find screenwriters tend to bring a brevity and making each word count, kind of sense with them, because they needed to be able to, you know, keep it down to that, you know, what is it, 100 pages or so to
create a full feature film is about 120 pages, and it's very tricky how it works out, because a dialogue conversation could be 5 pages just because of how it's formatted on the page, but then something like a car chase is like 12 words.
Right.
You know, they had a car chase through the city. They were on the sidewalks and going through buildings, and it was madness. And that's an entire, 5 minutes of film.
Right. Yep. So, you know, you got all this experience. You've been telling stories all your life, led you to this point. And I liked the bit about having 3 girls. I have 2 girls, and I kind of feel the same way. I have a son and 2 daughters, and it was a challenge. They're grown now, but I can remember getting through those tween and teen years were kind of interesting.
Yeah, I have 13, 11, and a 9-year-old. So it's just
you're just starting.
Yeah. They just discovered how much they don't like each other. So that's fun.
Yeah. It'll all come around. That's all I can tell you. It just, you're going to have to ride it out for the next 10 years or so, but there's light. It's a pinpoint right now, but there's light at the end of that tunnel.
That's all I need. A little glimmer of hope.
So where did the idea for this series come from?
I consider myself a hate writer. If you've ever heard of John Stapley, he's an author. He only wrote 2 books, Vampires and Armor. But all of his friends were telling him about Starship Troopers, and he went and read Starship Troopers, and he thought that it was he was underwhelmed. And out of spite, he wrote an entire book of what he thought Starship Troopers should have been. And his book came to be known as Armor. But when I left the theater in 2001 after seeing Lord of the Rings, I just kind of expected more spectacle with all of the special effects we had available. And it was very true to the source material. Magic was very understated and kind of in the background. And I always thought that in a world where magic was, so readily available, it would be everywhere. You know, everybody who could do any degree of it would. And I wrote this screenplay of what I hoped to see when I went to see Lord of the Rings. And after years of nobody being interested in that screenplay, I kind of transposed it into this novel. So that's where the idea came from. A place where magic is as prevalent as technology is in our world.
Well, and the magic takes on lots of forms from what I can see. You know, you've got it seems like there's like some blood magic. There's other types of things that really kind of wow even the main character, who's kind of Nazi, I guess is his name, correct? And he he sees this, he sees lots of things as magical, but what he can do is pretty awesome, actually.
Typically,
and scary, because I gotta say that opening scene is like ridiculous. Ridiculous in a good way. I mean that in a very positive sense.
I didn't want you to get halfway into the book and be like, whoa, where did that come from? I wanted you to know right away what kind of story we're dealing with here. It's so the thing is, I took everything. I took Star Wars and Star Trek and Avatar The Last Airbender and all of the various incarnations of magic. And I threw them all in the same world. And it's not so much about the hero becoming powerful enough to defeat the villain, but it's about a hero who has more power than he has wisdom or control, and the growth is about him as a person, as opposed to kind of ratcheting up his abilities.
No, I can see that, actually, and that's an interesting take on the genre, because so often it's the hero's journey where the person is in a journey of self-discovery of their abilities and things. And you're kind of taking that, turning it on its head and saying this is a hero's journey, but it's a journey about learning the inside, the inner self.
Yeah. It's not so much about being powerful enough to overcome your enemy, but being wise enough to know when and how to apply that power. I just thought it was a much more, despite this being fantasy, I thought it was a much more realistic thing. Because, I mean, you know, you can go get a car and smash into somebody, but you know, it's knowing when and how to use the abilities that you have that really separate heroes from lunatics. So I think.
No, I like the concept, and I wonder, you know, is this something you just apply? You think you're just going to apply to this series, or is this something that you'd like to, you know, kind of make a common theme throughout your work? Or is this just something you're exploring for this particular project?
Well, each of my projects will have a theme, but this. The development of the self, the analyzing of the internal exposed to the external is much more fascinating to me. So there'll probably be an element of that in everything I write. I'm an Army veteran, and I've seen people who get promoted and get power and have no idea what to do with it or how to use it reasonably or responsibly. And I see just how quickly that can go south if you don't have the maturity to match the power. So no matter what I do, I think that'll be an element of it.
It's you know, I've seen that too in different aspects of things as a paramedic and work, you know, working around firefighters and police and things like that. And, I think it happens in all sorts of things. It can happen in a corporate workplace too. When someone gets promoted to a position of authority and suddenly has no idea what to do with the power they have. And often leadership is about not using that power as much as it is about having it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You and I are of a similar mind on that. the concept of I can, but should I, it seems to be the crux of, you know, what separates the hero from the villain. Cause really the only difference between the hero and the villain is, how they use what they have. And I think that's much more interesting to explore than, you know, I'm a big anime fan. So, you know, the hero goes against the villain, he loses, he goes and trains, he comes back and he wins. Yeah. But outside of his physicality, there's been no growth or evolution whatsoever. You know, he's still the same prepubescent mental child, you know, yeah. you get the man child scenario.
Yeah, and you've got the villain who is all, you know, I can, so I will.
Right, and right. That's his whole thing.
And you're exploring a hero from the other direction, saying, you know, they're coming from a position of I can, so I will, and I see Nazi like struggling with that from the very beginning. You know I can, but I shouldn't.
Right.
And you know, and then when it comes out, it's disturbing.
It's ugly. Yeah.
It's disturbing. There's no other way to put it. I mean, you know, like I said, that for people that don't know what we're talking about here, go find By the Hand of the Dragon's Rook and just read the opening scene. It is intense to say the least, but probably one of the, it's almost like a Quentin Tarantino moment.
That is fantastic. The first person who wasn't related to me who read the story said it's like Lord of the Rings if it was directed by Quentin Tarantino, which I thought was the highest praise I could ever expect.
Yeah, he's an amazing writer. You know, there's a certain amount, there's a certain way he visualizes a scene and you know, and directors tell the story of the film, right? I mean, they take a script and they interpret it in through their own lens and tell the story the way they see it. And he has a certain way that he can turn a phrase, that he can set up the shot that catches you by surprise every time. And that's really the trick with writing, you know, in the fantasy genre, because there's just so much that people have seen and done 100 times before with a bunch of other books. And
yes.
How do you do something fresh? How do you approach something from a fresh angle, or do something that's truly surprising to the reader?
Right. So, the way I write is, I burn the candle at both ends and meet in the middle. So I kind of get the concept. I figure out my starting point. I figure out my ending point. And from there, I'll figure out the middle. And then I'll slowly fill in the pieces between the end and the middle and the beginning and the middle. And I'll work towards the middle. And I really just have these three big beats to hit. And then I'll fill in the story in between. And once that structure is laid, once that skeleton is laid, then I go in and I just keep interjecting complications every place I can stuff one in there. But the beautiful thing about Tarantino is, if you watch something like Kill Bill, where he'll give you the dialogue and it's just enough story to string the action together, and then he gives you these incredible action pieces. But then in something like Pulp Fiction, it's the dialogue that is the action. You know, and the way the characters interact and the words they use and how distinct their personalities are, that even if you don't know who's talking, you know who's talking. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just about giving everything a voice of agency. Everything is important. Every person is important. There's no filler.
And, you know, Tarantino possesses that ability even in shorter format work, because I know he directed one of the scenes in The Four Rooms, right? Which is just absolutely just classic him, but just such a work of art, even though it's a shorter, you know, it's a short story, a single one of the rooms in The Four Rooms, and just kind of interesting to see how he interpreted that and told a whole story in the midst of this, you know, this longer
chaos.
Work.
Yeah. That is my next mountain to climb. I cannot write short to save my life. So that's my next thing. I like words. I like, Latinate, big, multisyllabic. I'm not sure how to pronounce this words. I just think they're beautiful. And sometimes you have to get terse, and sometimes you get, you know, dramatic, and you use the shortest words possible in the shortest sentence possible. But when I can just... like the opening description of the scene, when I'm setting a scene and I can just go crazy in prose, those are my favorite parts to write. They're just, you know, absolutely self-indulgent, but I love to just, you know, like, how vivid a picture can I paint with just these letters?
Yeah, well, but that's, you know, that's almost expected in an epic fantasy kind of, you know, setting where, you know, I mean, I talk about this all the time, you know, Tolkien describing the bark on the freaking trees. I mean,
you know,
2 pages later and I'm like, come on, dude, it's bark.
Yeah, we got it. It's a tree. I've seen it. A lot of people went after Martin about his meal descriptions. Like, when he tells you about a feast, he tells you about a feast.
Have you seen Martin? I mean, I think he enjoys the food. You know what I'm saying?
The man knows his way around a dinner table.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. No offense meant intended by that. Right, I do too. But yeah. You know, there's a reason I think he's you know, it's probably why the Red Feast ended up the way it did. He was kind of battling with himself.
I've got to get away from the food.
Yeah, right. So, you know, this is a great project. Do you see this going on? You know, how many books are projected to be in this particular series?
The problem is, when I envisioned this story, it was a trilogy. And I was stationed in South Korea along the DMZ on top of a mountain. And we had limited internet access. I didn't have a personal computer, but I had a stack of spiral notebooks. So book 3 alone came out to be 1,404 pages because I just had time. You know, I just had time on my hand. So now that I'm breaking it into smaller chunks, it might end up being 8 books. But yeah, the original concept for this, like, the first book was 780 pages, and it was the smallest one in the trilogy. So the story has a definite end and a beginning. But the amount of books really just it comes down to, what do I think the thickest hunk of tree a person's going to read is?
It's the books are impressive in length, that's for sure. But I think that also is something that people appreciate in the genre, you know, for this type of fantasy writing. You know, I write urban fantasy, they tend much shorter, 60,000 to 80,000 words for a lot of urban fantasy books out there. But they also, you know, they want you to churn out stuff fast. You know, epic fantasy and this type of, you know, thriller and stuff is much more, people are much more patient, I guess, is the way I would put it.
Well, I was, and I'd like your opinion on this. Do you think it's, in urban fantasy, a large portion of the world is there? And, you know, when Tolkien was describing Minas Tirith, there was nothing to compare it to. So he needed 3 pages, you know, to tell you.
And you're absolutely right. I mean, all you have to do is say, you know, so-and-so took out their phone because the text message came through. You don't have to describe how text messaging works.
Right.
You don't have to describe what a phone looks like. In fact, I urge people when I talk about it to, like, don't describe the freaking phone.
Please,
because,
please,
good Lord, who knows what a phone's going to look like in 10 years? And you want your book to age well. So right. if you said, you know, because, you know, 10 years ago, you would have said, took out their phone and flipped it open. Well, guess what?
Oh, yeah.
You just made yourself a grandparent.
Because those days are gone.
Those days are gone. But yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, the world exists. Urban fantasy takes place by definition in a familiar setting. In our current modern world, it may not be in an urban specifically place, but it is a modern world setting, and that helps a lot, because you don't have to describe a car. You can tell somebody they got in an SUV. Well, you can picture a black SUV. But you're right. When you're building these fantasy, deep fantasy worlds, you have to describe the magic. You have to describe how, you know, the different races look and how they differ from each other in excruciating detail, because people don't necessarily know. Now you can get away with some crutches. You can use elves and dwarves and orcs and, you know, and people will at least have a starting point, but you still have to explain your version of it.
Right. Right. What I tried to do was, I tried to get, as many of the classic fantasy tropes in, but, you know, turn them just 45 degrees. For example, I have giants, but the giants are incredibly intelligent and remarkably beautiful. They're not, you know, big, dumb, lumbering idiots. And their society is, you know, to rival anything anybody else has. And, I just wondered, if a society was full of large, stupid, ugly people, would it even last? I don't think
that's actually a great point.
You know, I don't like, how does it carry on when no one can figure out a spoon? I just don't understand how that would work.
No, that makes perfect sense. I've actually never considered it from that angle before, but you're right. I mean, I think everybody considers them to be, you know, big stupid cavemen, and you know, that doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense. Although it fits, you know, into the mythical sense of it.
It's like when the first time somebody said, why did I ever believe in a tooth fairy? Like, what is somebody doing with a bag of teeth? And, you know, I was 35 the first time it crossed. I was like, yeah, what?
it's freaking creepy. I mean, there's no way around that, right? I mean, what are they doing with all these children's teeth?
I just got a shelf full of teeth.
You know, are they tiling a pool with them? I mean, you know.
Oh, that's nightmare fuel.
Right, right. Oh my gosh, I actually shared a news item on my Facebook page with my reader group today. Somebody, like, house was, like, on the same sewer line as a slaughterhouse, and the sewers backed up and pumped like a foot of animal blood into these people's basement.
My urban fantasy
brain clicked into gear right away. And I'm like, all right, was it really from a slaughterhouse, or did somebody in that house accidentally, like, open a portal to hell and they had to close it real fast, but not before a foot of blood came into the room. Right.
Oh man. And now you got my brain running. Yeah, that's tough. Wow.
I mean, the picture was nasty. Like, the guy was like squeegeeing blood across the floor. It was nasty.
You just moved. You let the blood have the house. just like,
I'm not staying in the blood house anymore. There's no way I'm going to fix this. How do you even make the call to your insurance agent on something like that?
What? There is not enough Febreze in the world. that's going to be terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, there's stuff like that happens and you just, you know, what do you do?
Yeah. Just.
and that's actually the thing that when I see a story like that, I realize I'll never run out of stories to tell, because life is truly stranger than fiction. And the minute I think I can't come up with a good story, something like a guy with a foot of blood in his basement pops up and I go, all right, I can write about that.
Oh yeah.
I can come up with a reason that happened.
Probably a couple hundred.
Yeah.
It's funny. This is, when I was a kid, you really had to go to movies or, you know, you had your Star Trek, your Twilight Zone, you know, all these places where you had these little pockets where you could go and kind of expand your imagination. But now there's nothing better than the news. Like right now, the news is that has every kind of plot device or, you know, story inspiration you could be looking for. The world is just in a crazy place right now.
I completely agree. It was crazy when I walked downstairs. As a matter of fact, I was like, do I stay and listen or do I know?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I was just like, okay, I'm going to go down and do the podcast thing because that's real. And who knows what the heck is going on. And I mean, it always changes. So I just kind of like laugh and keep going. But I mean, you're right. And I think that, you know, for a lot of writers, this is an inspiring time to be writing fiction, whether you write political thrillers or fantasy stories or whatever the case may be, cozy mysteries even. I mean, there's a ton of good, you know, story fodder out there.
A story popped up on my Facebook feed where they had grown a human heart on a plant. And I was like, oh, man, I can go 100 different ways with this. But, you know, science fiction is science fact, and every day, you know, what used to be fantasy is now real. It's staggering. It's absolutely amazing.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And it's like I said, I don't think I'll ever run out of stories. Every time I start to think, you know, what am I going to do for my next project? And then, you know, stuff like the, you know, foot of blood in the basement floor pops up and I go, okay,
I'm good. A lot of books.
Yeah. Well, I stay busy. This is what I do. So I treat it like a job. I mean, you know, before I was writing, I was writing part-time, but once I started writing full-time, I treated it like a full-time job. And I pretty much write or work in my author business a solid 8 hours every work day and some more on the weekends you know, if I do it that way, then I can keep cranking books out and my readers like that. So
I'm kind of at the point where everything that I'm putting out now has already been produced, and I'm hitting this wall where I want to create, you know, but I already have the manuscripts written. It's really a matter of, you know, editing and polishing them up and making whatever changes came from the changes I made in the last book. But when you get to the end of a series and you start a new series from scratch, like how terrifying is that?
Oh, it is. I actually was just talking about this with another fantasy writer. And you know, she was just talking about finishing a series, and you know, it's bittersweet to wrap up a series and say, goodbye to those characters in that part of the world. And maybe you'll revisit it in another sense with other characters and maybe have a visit from your, you know, a cameo appearance or something.
Right.
But, there's a certain amount of comfort when you write in the same series in the same world, because you've already built it. And so starting over again with a new main character, I ran into this summer, and a lot of people listening to this podcast have ridden through this journey with me, where I really struggled with a new series I was writing because, and looking back at it, it all came from the fact that I could not dial in the main character. You know, it was urban fantasy. So it's a, you know, a female, kick-ass hunter type. And I just couldn't dial in herself, you know, her sense of who she was and what made her badass. And so she never really got to be likable until like the fourth iteration of that story. When I finally figured out how to make her fun, you know,
gotcha.
That's a challenge. But the good news is I feel like I know her now. And so I can have fun with her. She can tell jokes and, you know, do all those things that a really fully fleshed out character can do.
Like, I move boxes at FedEx, right? I purposely found a job where there's no thinking involved. You know, they're like, put those boxes over there. And I'm like, cool, leave me alone. I'll get it done. But the whole time I'm working, I'm building on ideas. And I like to get to know the characters inside and out. And then when I put them in the same room, the story writes itself, because there are certain things this guy would do and wouldn't do, and this guy would do and wouldn't do, and if these characters would get along or not. It's all baked in, so it's really just a matter of me pushing the keys.
I mean, it's almost like a situation comedy, but with fantasy, right? You put them in if you put certain characters in a certain situation, they can only act certain ways.
Exactly, and I find that like once I get that final piece of the puzzle of the character's personality, the story takes care of itself. Yeah, just the kind of calamities or hijinks that they're going to get into, the farce that will come out of just these personality types being in the same room, that takes care of itself. It's just a matter of getting time to sit in a chair.
Yeah, I that's the challenge, I think. But you know, there's ways. I know a lot of authors who've found ways to get around that, especially when they have family and work and other things going on. The piece of advice I would offer to a lot of people is, you know, you can write surprising amounts of words in 5, 10, 15 minute chunks.
Oh yeah.
And you'll surprise yourself. I mean, you gotta set yourself up for a sprint, but you kind of think out a scene to the point that you really are ready to write it, you know, just kind of get your brain in the right place. And then whether it's on a bus ride home or, you know, sitting at lunch while you're kind of putting, you know, finishing your sandwich and you've got another 10, 15 minutes left on your break, pull out your phone and just start thumbing away and you'll get to the other end and you might have 500 words down.
Yeah. And that's fantastic.
And that's a scene, or at least the beginning of a scene. And then you can always expand upon that. You know, if you can get the bones down, go home and flush it out.
I think the best advice I ever got in all of writing was you can't edit what's not on the page.
Yep.
Like, just, you know, get it down.
Yeah.
Get it out of your head, get it down, and then you can tinker with it. While I do have access to you, I do have a question. This story evolves genre-wise. So it's pretty much epic fantasy at the beginning. But it does get a little darker. It does get more adult as it goes on. And I'm not really sure how to express that because I don't want somebody to pick up book one and they think, well, you know, this is a little violent, but it's epic fantasy. And then pick up book five and say, whoa, where'd all this nudity come from? So how would one make a genre journey with the same story?
I think you've got to, you know, first off, you got to acknowledge the fact that people that like a certain percentage of readers don't read the description on the web page. So they look at the cover, they look at the title, they look at the genre, and they just buy it. And then a certain percentage of them will actually get annoyed because they didn't read it and you didn't tell them somehow, like internally, seeded into their brain while they were reading.
Psychically divine to me, this wisdom.
And you'll get a 1-star review. It'll happen. But the other side of that is, I would leave a very clear description, part of your description, that says, you know, this is a, you could say this storyline in this series progresses from PG-13 to hard R over the course of the series, or something along those lines.
will do. Like, well, right now, most of the people who read my books are people who know me personally, so they understand I'm a hard R kind of guy.
Yeah, but I mean, you can tell that story, you know, and you can write that sentence in there. It says, you know, for the readers that want to start this series, it'll start out as a you know, a heavy PG-13, but it will, over the course of the next five books, travel through to become a hard R storyline. And, you know, you may want to know that up front. And you've given them a disclaimer. They go in with their eyes open. For some people, that may even be a hit, you know, something that they like go, oh, wow, I want to see how they does this, right? But I mean, there are other books that have done it, just not quite to that extent. I mean, you know, the Harry Potter series even starts off as a very much like middle grade storyline. You know, it's a book about a 12-year-old for 12-year-olds or even 10 and 8-year-olds. And
by the end,
they're teenagers with adult situations. People are dying graphically.
Oh, yeah.
not as graphically as you do, needless to say, but they do die, and beloved characters are gone forever.
And you know,
and that's not something that your average 12-year-old is necessarily ready for.
Right. Right. So. Yeah, when I got to Order of the Phoenix, I was like, this is not the same series. Like, these are the same characters, but this is not Goblet of Fire.
No, well, and the characters grew up with Harry. And so it's one of the more genius things that J.K. Rowling did was write a story that grew up with her audience.
Because
every bit of, you know, by the time my kids had been done, my kids grew up right as those stories were coming out. I mean, I literally had to go to Walmart and wait there for the midnight release when they rolled the pallet out, you know, of the Harry Potter books and, you know, they were all on a pallet and then everybody rushed in and grabbed one or two or whatever and then went to the register. I was that guy getting those books for my kids. And what I found was that as my kids were becoming teenagers, so was, you know, Harry was also a teenager and, you know, falling in love with Cho Chang and, mm-hmm. you know, and going through those moments and then discovering Ginny. And my kids were going through the same things. And I think it was just a genius move on her part that she could have kept writing very much middle grade storylines.
Right.
But she never would have become, it never would have become the international sensation it is if it hadn't grown up with its readers.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where, you know, what interests you at 12 is not so interesting at 16. But, you know, she just kept hitting the nail on the head, you know, book after book. And I kind of want to follow in that response, but also to be true to the characters. The biggest problem with these, the crux, the very fundamental core of these characters is they are born and bred for war. They are preparing for a war and they see everything through the lens of war. And even their relationships are, it's kind of a soldier's mentality of what romance is, you know,
right.
It's not like, you know, hey, I picked these wildflowers for you. It's like, look at this dagger I made you. You know, they have a very, you know, a skewed perspective of life. And I wanted to follow that evolution as they age. And they start off with this very naive, very heroic concept of war. And the more they experience war, the more they start to realize the reality doesn't match the fantasy. And I really wanted to follow that. And it definitely gets a little darker and it gets a little more adult. But I think anything less would be disingenuous.
Well, and you know, you've got to tell the story that's inside you to tell. You know, and you know, every author has to make that decision with every single story they tell is what is true for them. And we all are sharing a part of ourselves, a part of our own personal truth in everything we write in some way, shape or form. So,
absolutely.
Listen, we could, Alexander, it sounds like you and I could just sit here and chat about story and books and movies and all kinds of stuff for like ever in a day. But unfortunately this podcast has to come to an end at some point. where can people find you online? Where's the best place for you to connect with readers?
I have a Facebook page, bythehandofdragons.com, or bythehandofdragons/Facebook, Alexander Christian /Facebook. That is Alexander with an X and a Z, and Christian with a T-I-O-N, not T-I-A-N. That just, it's just a thing my dad did. Also, I have my own webpage, bythehandofdragons.com, and I have a blog, By the Hand of Dragons. I'm on Twitter at By the Hand of Dragons. Just type in By the Hand of Dragons. You'll get to me.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Alexander, it's great having you on the show. I look forward to kind of following through with this story and seeing where this hard R goes. thank you very much for coming on the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. And we'd love to have you come back sometime in the future when you have more stuff out and want to talk some more with me about stories and movies and all the other fun stuff we hit on tonight.
This has been a blast. I'll come back anytime you'll have me.
That's going to wrap up this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. Make sure you catch up with us for a whole lot more from the entire Fantasy Focus community, which you can find over on Facebook and over at fantasy-focus.com. When you get over there, you'll find the podcast episodes on the tab at the top of the page. Leave a comment on this episode if you do have one and you have a question for the author that I've interviewed, and I'd be happy to get that to them so they can answer it for you. Also on the website, at the top of each podcast episode post, right there below the audio player, is the links to sign up and subscribe for the podcast. So basically, if you have iOS or Android devices, even by email, you can just click the relevant link and it'll actually just show you exactly how to subscribe. Super easy. Some of them are even one click, depending on your device. It'll just automatically subscribe you in the relevant podcast app, which is great. We also have some pretty awesome authors scheduled, which is one of the reasons you want to be subscribed. Next episode in the podcast is going to feature the amazing Kendra Meeks. And she's awesome. We talk about urban fantasy writing. We talk about urban fantasy characters and growing up in small towns. So you won't want to miss that one. It's definitely a lot of fun chatting with her. That's it for this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jamie Davis, author of Fun Fantasy Reads. Don't forget to follow me over on Facebook at jamiedavisbooks.com and at my website, jamiedavisbooks.com as well. Facebook, where you can get me at Jamie Davis Books. And don't forget my Fun Fantasy Readers group. Remember, we're going to have a giveaway coming up next week, so you'll definitely want to check that out. We're going to have a bunch of fun prizes to give away. And I'd love for people to be able to take part in that, so check it out. Whatever you do, though, make sure you subscribe to the show. Come back here and catch the next podcast. And while you're waiting for that, make sure you keep your eyes open, folks, because whether you know it or not, there's magic all around you.